It's time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Laois, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Hello and a very good evening to you all. It's Tuesday, the 30th of August. I'm Ronan Berry and you're very welcome to Taking Care of Business here on Midlands 103. That's it, isn't it? Summer as we know it, holidays is over. Kids are going back to school this week. Many are back already. Sign of things to come, maybe. Ready. Everybody getting ready for a busy September as people make their way back into the workplace and say goodbye to summer holidays and time off and waiting on stuff to happen because colleagues are on holidays or suppliers are on holidays or whatever it might be. Yeah, the summer's coming to an end. Not from a weather perspective, though. Still quite nice out there. But what have I got coming up for you on Taking Care of Business this evening? Well, we'll be looking at the temperature of what it's like to run a business in the Midlands, given everything that's taking place at the minute. And the full effect of rising business costs will be explored, particularly as today it was revealed that a Midlands nursing home has been forced to close its doors due to escalating costs. And also, the cafe in Athlone that received what can only be described as an eye-watering electricity bill recently. I mean, the scale of increases is staggering, and I would love to hear your opinion on it too, as both a householder or indeed as a business owner as well. We'll follow on that kind of rising cost of business too, and Peter Boland from the Alliance for Insurance Reform will be here to talk about their calls for the government to intervene on behalf of many sectors that cannot get insurance. The scary thing is, they released a list the other day, about 45 different sectors or subsectors that at the minute are really, really struggling to get insurance. Some who cannot get it at all, and those who can, many are down to maybe just one underwriter at this present, and most of those underwriters aren't even in this country. So talk about the scale of the challenges that are facing businesses too. Later in the show, you're going to hear from Port Arlington's Mark Pearson. Mark has just started his dream job up in Dublin in the Lego shop. Now it goes, Mark's is absolutely a Lego fanatic. Great story to tell. So Mark will be along at about 7:45 to tell his story there too. It really is a dream role for him. Find out why just in a little while. If you do want to get in touch with me here in the studio, you can do so by text or WhatsApp on 083 3010 103. That of course is powered by the home of Offaly's top selling car brand, Lambrothers Toyota, Arden Road, Tullamore. Love to hear your thoughts on the cost of living right now and indeed the cost of doing business. But it's not all doom and gloom, because as you'll have known from listening to Taking Care of Business over the past 5 years, businesses in the Midlands have proven themselves time and time again to be innovative, to be resilient, and to, even though with all the challenges that might be coming or they might be facing, to continue trying to deliver great service and to deliver the products and services that their customers need. And no business kind of typifies this as much as Code Clothing in Tullamore. It, of course, is owned by Anthony and Cara Cairns, that dynamic husband and wife team. And Cara joins me now because Code has just taken a massive leap into the formal wear for ladies. Very much a passion project for Cara. Now, Cara is joined in studio too by Lucy Cairns. And Lucy is going to join us in a few minutes as well to talk about some products she has for sale. And I can already see it. Lucy appears to be the spokesperson for Guy in Code. The only thing I haven't told you, she's only 7 years of age. She is sitting here very, very patiently, but she's going to let her mammy speak first, we think, anyway. Cara, I suppose, to begin with yourself, this range of formal wear has been a project that's been a couple of years in the making. How did it all begin, and why did you go this route in the first place?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's obviously something that we have planned for years, and you start off in business and you go through different things and you learn from your customers what they want, and you learn who your customer is, really. Now, obviously, we have a wide customer base. We stock a lot from clothing, footwear, accessories. Occasional slash formal wear has been something for us that we've done loads and loads of beautiful brands, stunning brands, but for some reason, quite not us, quite not our customer. So this is definitely something that we're really, really passionate about. I think it screams Code. There's a lot of stuff that we do buy, and I'm sure every retailer does it, that you know is commercial but might not be your style. So definitely, with Code being 10 years open this September, this is definitely something that is Code, and we think it is our customer. So we're hoping that everybody's going to love it as much as we do.
You kind of took samples of what was out there already, stuff that you say you'd purchased before, you tried to sell in the shop and that, and you decided to go and tweak about it and really make it your own?
Yeah. Obviously, we've seen a lot of suits over the years. Suits, I think, are absolutely massive. I think they're really, really classy. I think they can be twigged for any occasion. Personally, I love suits. I wore actually a sample of this to the Midlands 103 Awards very recently. We thought that they'd be in a little bit earlier, but they weren't. Like everything else, they got delayed. But there was a lot of twigging. There was a lot of work done on fabrics, lengths of legs, style of legs, what we think is going to be really big going forward. Just the overall detail of the suit as well. It's double-breasted buttons. It's got a beautiful little peplum at the front, which is good for coverage as well for women. But it's definitely, we think it's definitely a power suit.
And you really put a lot of work into that design too, as you were saying, even just off air there, like the length of getting the details right and the sizing and that, even down to choosing fabrics. I mean, how do you go about doing that? Like, does that involve a lot of travel, or how do you go about picking fabrics for clothing?
Yeah, like obviously we see a lot of fabrics, a lot of different fabrics in a lot of our stock. We always, quality is number one for us. Then obviously you have to look at the price point. I think with regards to the length of the cuff, a lot of people, any of the ladies out there that listen to me in code, no matter what it is, if it's a blazer, I'll always have it cuffed up. If it's a jumper, it'll always be pulled up. I just think, especially for a function, if you're wearing jewellery, bracelets, watches, etc., it's shorter on your cuff so that you don't hide any of that detail. But yeah, we're lucky that we have a really, really good Irish supplier. Quality is fantastic, but it has been a long process to get it right. Lots of samples, lots of tweaking. But yeah, thank goodness we're very happy with it.
Anybody who passes the window on Patrick Street in Tullamore, first thing that will strike them probably is the colours.
Yeah, we've all five colours. Well, we started off with five colours coming from just transitional styles from spring, summer into autumn, winter. There's beautiful colours. You have the staple black. We then have done in an off-white, which we've made sure is double lined more than the other ones for coverage. I think the off-white would be ideal for hen parties, the day after somebody's wedding for the bride. Really, really classy, really easy to wear. You have a beautiful strong red, a gorgeous purple, the black, and then the turquoise, obviously, which I think is a colour that just suits everybody, no matter what they're colouring.
Are you seeing that demand as well coming from your customers, like particularly women in the workplace now? Is something that you would see them availing of as well? And
yeah,
it's obviously a gap that was there and a need that had
to
be filled.
Yeah, definitely. It could be your good work suit. Like it's so handy in the sense that you can mix and match it and make it look so different in so many ways. Like by adding a headpiece for a wedding and a pair of heels, you're there. You can put a nice court heel with it because, again, the length, now it is obviously dependent on your height, but the length of it is a standard ankle length so that you do have the novelty to wear different footwear with it and it'll look different every way.
Similar service then to what people would be familiar with men's suits, obviously adjustable, you know, can be tailored to suit the
exactly.
suit your own needs as well.
And at the moment it's stocked in sizes 8 to 16, but obviously can be made in any size.
How has it been received so far? Are people braving it and people...
Great. Yeah, it's been really, really good. Now, like I said, it should have been here a lot earlier, but we didn't want to rush it. We wanted to make sure that everything was absolutely perfect and that we were happy with it. But it just landed in a couple of weeks ago. Good timing, because obviously we have Dervla O'Rourke. We dress her for a lot of her TV appearances. But it literally just landed in 2 days before she came to the shop. So she was the first one to try it on. And she wore two of them recently. That got a great, great feedback. But it's only in a couple of weeks. We still have a few things up our sleeve to do a launch on it as well.
That doesn't surprise me at all. You mentioned things like supply chains, and any business owner I talk to, like, they just say things are just chaotic at the minute. What's really interesting was the week before last, Brown Thomas opened up their famous Christmas shop in the middle of August.
Mm-hmm.
But just to give you an idea, when do ye at Guy & Co actually start preparing for Christmas?
Oh my goodness. We start preparing like a good 12 months in advance. Like I've all spring, summer 23 done. So I'll be starting autumn, winter 23 very shortly in the buying. That's how far ahead we buy. Customer wise, people are definitely started already. We have the deposit system. They put stuff on deposit. It secures a lot of the sportswear and stuff as well. It secures that your size is there and you can tip away at it. Then with the gift cards, you can top up the money with the gift cards, the multi-brand between Code and Guy. So people have definitely started now. But yeah, we're always ahead. We're always thinking ahead. So it's very hard to stay in the season. But yeah, loads of autumn, winter and Christmas stock coming already.
There you go. I've mentioned Christmas just at the tail end of August too. Another very special guest that really wants to get a word in, because Code is 10 years in business next month. Guy Clothing is already 12 years, but 8 years on High Street in Tullamore. And that 8 years kind of coincides more or less with the birthday of the girl that's sitting in front of me. She's 7-year-old Lucy Kearns, and she is chomping at the bit to get speaking here. But this isn't just any story, because Lucy is actually a supplier to Code as well. Lucy, can you tell everybody, what do you make and sell in Code?
So basically, I have these beads at home and I love making bracelets. So I just decided, I asked Mommy one day, what if I make some bracelets and call them the Rainbow Bracelets and sell them in Code? And she said yes, and it was a great idea. So that's what I'm doing at the moment. We have all different seasons, like say when it gets to Christmas. We're going to have all that. So there's some in stock, and there's great colours for summer and autumn. If you would like to come and purchase some, that would be brilliant.
And you're wearing one at the minute, and I can see why they're called rainbow bracelets. The colours are fantastic. Do you choose all the colours and the styles yourself and make them?
Yeah.
You are very, she is very particular on her colours. She has the rainbow theme, and I have to do the knots and stuff for them for her, so they're really, really secure.
Because she has to do the knots, I'm not really able. I could try it sometimes, but I want them to be really secure so they don't break on someone's
Absolutely.
Wrist.
She's very particular.
Yeah, and quality is hugely yeah. important as well. I heard you went back to school today.
Yeah.
So who's going to make the bracelets now you're back in school?
I can make them after school, no problem.
Wow. Wow, that's
Keep
incredible.
Keep yourself after the homework.
After
Keep
the
yourself
homework,
busy.
Very important as well. Well, it certainly seems the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. Do you enjoy being involved with Mammy and Daddy in the shops?
Yes. And I want to say another thing, which is mostly related to Code. Code still has back to school Lily Kelly tin.
She's such a businesswoman. For anybody who didn't get their Lily Kellys, Lucy's saying there is sizes available.
And just for anybody who might be curious, Lucy has no notes in front of her. That's all coming out of her.
We didn't know what was going to come out there.
Lucy, thank you so much for bringing your mammy in this evening and getting her to go on the radio again.
She kind of told me that.
I know you weren't going to let her away with it as well. Carol, to yourself and Auntie as well. Anthony, it's credit as well for you. You're still going. You're always trying to innovate, keep things fresh as well. It's fantastic to see that new range of formal wear for ladies. If people want to find out more, what's the best way to find out more?
Definitely follow us on social media, Facebook and Instagram. Obviously, if you're in Tullamore, pop in. But all our new arrivals, everything every day goes up on the social media pages. And obviously, we're there on the phones as well. So delighted to hear from people.
Cara, thanks a million. And of course, a big thanks to Lucy as well. The rising cost of doing business is at the forefront of all the media lately. And the reality is, it's not just, it's not just the notional thing. We're seeing every day horrendous examples of the rising cost. But one thing that has been ever present for quite a while is the issue around insurance. Never mind the rising cost of insurance, although over the last year, maybe things have changed a little bit. They hopefully bring it down a small bit. But a hugely pressing issue at the minute is the fact that some people and some businesses in certain sectors are struggling to get insurance at all and therefore can't continue in operation. To try and delve a bit more into this, I'm glad to be joined by Peter Boland from the Alliance for Insurance Reform. Now, the Alliance represents and brings together 47 civic and business organisations from across the country, representing over 55,000 members, 700,000 employees, and 622,000 volunteers, and 374,000 students. And they try to highlight the negative impact of persistently high premiums and are calling for real and lasting reform that will reduce liability and motor insurance premiums to affordable levels, because we all need stuff to become more affordable. But the Alliance have recently called on government to intervene on behalf of sectors that cannot get insurance. And it created a list just last week of about 45 different sectors or subsectors, which is staggering in its own right. Peter, this situation, it doesn't seem to be improving, or certainly improvements is very slow scale. What's the latest on it, and how come so many sectors are just struggling to get insurance in the first place?
Well, first of all, Ronan, I suppose credit is due. The government has been working on this issue for the last number of years through a cabinet subcommittee and on insurance reform chaired by the Taoiseach. And they've made quite a bit of progress on a couple of the big ticket issues, such as the level of damages paid out for minor fully recovered injuries, Garda fraud unit, and new legislation on perjury. There are a couple of major outstanding issues, particularly rebalancing the duty of care.
Peter, I'm just going to have to interrupt. There's quite a bit of an echo coming off your phone. I don't know whether you can move a little bit or just try. It's kind of giving us an echo there as you're speaking.
Okay, Ron, is that any better?
It's a little improved. Maybe continue with your point and we'll just see how we go. We might have to redo the phone call again. But no, continue. Sorry about that.
Okay. I've moved completely. So let's see how that goes. So they have made quite a bit of progress. But what we're seeing is the emergence of a two-tier setup. So private motorists have benefits under reforms today. So any of your listeners who are renewing their private motor insurance would expect a reduction of about 10 to 15% in the next few months. And we welcome that. And that's a direct benefit of the reforms. Liability insurance.
Sorry, I just find that line there is still giving a lot of interference on it there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to just a slightly different segment. We'll come back to Peter then in a few minutes. We'll try and line him up on a different phone because it's such an impressive issue. And I know myself from talking to business owners around the Midlands, that whole issue of insurance is a crucial one for them at this point in time. But as we look at that kind of rising cost of just doing business, I've even been in business now, it's becoming such a pressing issue. And you might have heard earlier today on Midlands Today with Will Faulkner, he spoke to the family behind a nursing home in Athlone that unfortunately has had to close its doors. It's a decision that it did not reach lightly. And, you know, one that really is a tale of caution, maybe in what might be what's happening out there and indeed maybe what might be going to come as well. Basically, the co-owner of the Midlands Nursing Home said it was devastating to have to close their doors. Claire McNally, who ran the Stella Maris Nursing Home with her sister, says running costs became an insurmountable problem for their business. Heating bills for the home increased by over 100%, but fees charged to those staying in the facility remained the same. Miss McNally spent her working life in the family business and says telling those staying in the home that they have to leave was extremely upsetting. Here she was earlier speaking to Will Faulkner on Midlands Today about the closures.
Cost is everything with it. You know, when you're a small independent nursing home, there's no funding backing you up. And we had meetings with HICWA and we had meetings with Fair Deal, who provide funding for most residents in nursing homes. And they weren't willing to increase anywhere near in line with inflation for us to stay open. And we were very honest and said that if you don't help us here, we're going to have to close. And they said there was nothing there to be able to assist us. So, you know, we just had to make the awful decision that we had to close our business after 35 years. And we're devastated by it. Like, we haven't been able to do interviews up until now because we've just been so upset.
I don't know your age, Claire, but that would represent a lot of your life and probably all of your professional life, would it?
All of my professional life, yes. So it's a family business, so we live above the nursing home. So we've all grown up there, and very much our home has been the nursing home. And we would have, before it even got really heavily regulated, would have spent as children a lot of time in the nursing home. And as we got older and the regulations got much more strict, we couldn't mix quite as much, but we've worked there. I've worked there all of my life. So I went off to England and did my nurse training and then was there for a few years and came home and have been working as a nurse in the nursing home for about 16 years.
So just again to round off that story, it's a 25-bed unit. It's been run by your family since the mid-1980s. And you would have, I presume, a lot of long-term residents or do you have stepped down? What tends to be the mix?
The majority would be long-term residents. So most recently, our longest term was a lady of 15 years and then two men were 11 and 9 years with us. So if you ever had to put a relative into a nursing home and how difficult it is to do that, we had to do that for all of our residents pretty much at the same time, you know. So it was devastating.
The economics of this. So private nursing homes, most people will have some form of subvention under the Fair Deal scheme, as it's known. And there's a fee that is paid by the resident, whatever the state doesn't cover. But the amount you receive as the operator of the nursing home, is that something you have any control over?
Absolutely none. So you have to have negotiations every year or 18 months or 2 years, depending on the length of time of the contract that you sign. So we signed a contract 2 years ago, and that brought our fee up to 950. It was staggered. It was went up to 920 and then went up to 950. But no matter what happens in that period of time, they won't engage with you to increase it. So the cost of everything has gone up, and we're not allowed to put up our fees. We're not allowed to charge extra fees then on top of that fee, because the resident fee has been worked out on their means, so we're not allowed to charge extra. So whereas every other business can increase their fees, we can't. And like, to put it into context, our electricity bill per month went from 2,500 to 5,000 per month, and we would usually get 2 fills of oil a month, and it went from 800 a fill to 2,200 for the last one. You know, there's just no wriggle room when you're already trying to provide such a high standard of care.
I mean, just doing rough maths, so €30,000 a year extra in electricity alone, and then a multiple of that for the oil. And as you say, normally a business would pass it on to the end user, if it was a shop, if it was a restaurant or whatever. Now, with some nursing homes, there's a fee per day for entertainment, social, newspapers, things like that. Do you have any room to manoeuvre there?
There's not a huge amount. So we had a small fee for that, and it wouldn't have even remotely covered any of the activities that we would have charged. But Fair Deal, as part of their negotiation, they come in and say that, oh, you know, Fair Deal doesn't cover this and it doesn't cover this. You should charge. Now, they won't tell you how much to charge, but they say you should start up some fee to go with that. But then on the other hand, HICWA come in and they tell you that you shouldn't be charging that fee, and you have to give a complete breakdown of that fee, and you have to show that it's optional, so that if people don't want to attend any of the activities, they have to be able to see that you're not charging it to everybody, that it's not a standard fee that everybody has to charge. So there's one agency telling you one thing, and then the regulators are telling you the other thing, and the regulators are coming in and they're so strict with their inspections. And I know some nursing homes have withdrawn that fee then, because it causes too much hassle when it comes to inspection time. And then Fair Deal will come back into the negotiations and say, you know, if you're struggling, you should increase this, because we're not going to increase.
Well, I can appreciate regulation is a double-edged sword. Nobody wants another lease cross, for instance.
No,
but there is
don't.
A balance, obviously. So in making the decision, I assume you explored every conceivable option, ways of cutting costs. What sort of ideas did you entertain?
There, you know, when you're already trying to provide the service, there's on a small fee, there's not a huge amount. Like, we have to heat the building 24 hours a day. We have to have staff 24 hours a day. There's not really much of a scope to reduce what your costs are, other than cutting wages, which, you know, isn't, people are already on a low enough income in a nursing home and they deserve so much more. But Fair Deal doesn't allow you to pay any more. And then the government have brought in the paid sick days and the extra bank holiday and the pension contributions that are coming in. But Fair Deal won't consider that in their negotiations as well. And then you've got COVID. There was assistance from the government pay towards outbreaks of COVID, but it was capped at a certain amount. So if you went over that amount, that came out of your funds, which there wasn't really much anyway of. Like, we, in our last inspection, we were highlighted that we needed to do some fire upgrades on the building, which we had done so much of in 2010. And of course, you want to fully protect everybody that's living there, especially if they're more vulnerable and they're not able to move as freely. And you need to have as much time as possible to evacuate people out of a building if they're not able to do it independently. So you're not going to scrimp on that. But like in since probably November of last year up until last month, we've spent about 100,000 on fire alone. And so it's not that we weren't committed to keep going. We've always just been happy that if we can pay the bills and pay the staff, we would keep going. But it's gotten to the point that we weren't able to do that. And I know we possibly should have done it a few months ago, but we had to come to terms with that decision ourselves, because it's more than just a nursing home to us. It's an extension of our family that we've had staff up to 34 years, so we're operating 35 years, and we have a staff member that's been with us for pretty much all of that time. We had to shatter her world as well as everybody else up until that. It's 20 years, 25 years. And that's what helped us build our reputation in Stelmaris, because we haven't had a high turnover of staff. During COVID, we didn't have an issue with staff. We had one outbreak just in April of this year and didn't need to use agency staff, but that doesn't mean that we wouldn't have needed to the next time, and we wouldn't have been able to afford to pay the agency had that happened.
It's so a great credit to you to have staff of that tenure, because it's an industry in which staff turnover can be a challenge. Can I ask you how you broke the news, not alone to the staff, but to the residents themselves, because it's their home?
We don't ever want, and thankfully we won't ever have to experience it again, because it was just utter devastation, because we were trying to say it to them and I suppose hold it together ourselves. But how do you not get emotional when you're telling somebody after all of these years that they have to move out? You know, you feel that it's your fault. You feel that you've let them down, you've let everybody down, but ultimately, we know that we've done everything that we can to keep going.
You're listening there to Claire McNally. She was the co-owner of the Stelmaris nursing home that she ran with her sister, but because of rising costs, they've had to make the agonising decision to close. You can just get a sense of how personal it was to them. But Claire mentions electricity costs and rising bills as well. Did you catch the latest one about the cafe in Athlone? They received an electricity bill of almost €10,000. Poppy Fields Cafe in Athlone has been charged €9,836.92 for 73 days of supply from June the 8th until August the 19th. Owner Geraldine Dolan says for the same period last year, it cost €34 per day, and that has now increased to €123 per day. She says the massive bill came as a shock.
It actually left me speechless, and I'm not speechless too often in my life. I can't even say any of our equipment is old, because pre-COVID we had done a refurbishment on the place. We did all new equipment, new kitchen, so we're completely up to date. We couldn't be in a better position. So it's not as if we have old wackety fridges working or old cookers and they're using up too much energy.
Isn't it just staggering too? Again, if you're a business owner and you're experiencing that jump in bills, please text me in 083 3010 103 on our Land Brothers Toyota Arden Road Tullamore text and WhatsApp line. I'd love to hear from you. Time for a quick break. After that, Peter Boland from the Alliance for Insurance Forum will be back. He's moved. He's got a better signal there now, and he'll take us through their latest campaign in order to get the government to intervene on behalf of sectors and subsectors that simply cannot get insurance at present. It's adding to already a huge list of headaches that business owners are experiencing. And then later on the show, you'll hear from Mark Pearson from Port Arlington, who's just taken up his dream job as a sales associate in the Lego store in Grafton Street in Dublin. Peter Boland from the Alliance for Insurance Forum joins me now. We had a little bit of an issue with the line a bit earlier in the show, but Peter is back. And Peter was talking about their latest campaign where they've been asking the government to intervene on behalf of sectors that cannot get insurance. They recently published a list of 45 sectors and subsectors and groups of individuals that are really struggling to get cover at all, or indeed who are reduced to just one underwriter option. They include things like adventure centres that deal with children, aqua parks, childcare providers, child minders, children's playground, non-local authority ones, education, equestrian sports. The list is almost endless. It stops at 45. I'm sure there's much more they could add to it. Peter, I'll go over to you again anyway. You were just trying to give us an overview of this campaign and what the real challenges are.
Yeah, so Ronan, we had we would concede that the government has done quite a bit in the last couple of years, and it's like it's 4.5 years, I think, now since I first sat in your studio outlining what needed to be done. And at that stage, there was a lot of scepticism that we would make any progress on this issue at all. But we've made some progress. It's benefiting private motorists, like I said on our earlier call. We would expect it to kick in for liability customers in the near future. Certainly, the insurers are obliged to do that now, given the savings that they're making on payouts. But what we're starting to see is a split between sectors that can get cover and sectors that can't. And what would seem to be at the bottom of this is a change in policy by insurers. Insurers have far more data available to them nowadays, and what they're doing with that data is they're drilling deeper and deeper into sectors and subsectors. So historically, the concept of insurance was that it was many putting money into a pot to cover the misfortunes of the few, and then the insurers would take a margin on that process and everybody was happy. But it's not the many anymore. They seem to be going through a process called micro-sectoring, where they're drilling deeper and deeper down into smaller and smaller sectors. So just to give you one example, there were 4 community circuses in the country, and they do huge amount of voluntary work with kids in particular, giving them skills that they would not pick up elsewhere, taking in kids often who don't necessarily have any interest in the conventional team sports, and so giving another outlet for kids, which is absolutely critical nowadays when you consider that child fitness, mental resilience and obesity are big issues when it comes to children. So they're central to Irish society at this stage. Previously, they would have been assessed as part of the broader cultural sector. Now, what they're being told is that they have to pay their way as 4 community circuses. That's just not commercially possible. So they're really struggling to get cover. And our concern is that they won't be able to get cover in the longer term if this continues. And then we have a decision as a society to make, which is, do we want to have those community circuses, or do we just let them fall away because it's an economic issue?
And then lament them then 10 years down the track and talk about what was great and what used to be too. But you mentioned in your press release, Peter, that, like, you know, a lot of companies are different, you know, in different sectors are down to pretty much one underwriter. Are you seeing then a direct correlation with increase in insurance premiums then because there's no other options?
Oh, it's black and white. So essentially what happens is that when a sector goes from 2 underwriters to 1 underwriter, the price rockets automatically. And when it's queried by policyholders, they're told that it's a commercial issue, which is code for we have control of the sector. We will charge what we like.
And what can the government do there? How can they intervene and maybe stop that practice, or what can be done, do you know?
Well, you know, when you're talking sectors that small, the issue often is that this is not a monopoly in the malevolent sense of the word. Very often it's an accidental monopoly in the sense that other underwriters were in the market, were providing competition, and have decided for one reason or another to withdraw. And this storyline has been repeated time after time over the last 5 years or so. So certainly when we had spoken first, you would have many sectors that had 2 or 3 underwriters giving quotes, albeit increasingly expensive quotes. But as what has happened in the interim period is that a lot of underwriters, particularly following up on Brexit, pulled out of the Irish market and have left single underwriters looking after very small sectors. And essentially the policyholders are at their mercy then, and they would be afraid in very many cases to say anything at all because they know that the consequences of an underwriter pulls out of their sector are dire.
Yeah. We've seen the government step in during COVID-19 to back businesses, you know, quite successfully overall. There's talks now of the government intervening to try to help businesses with the costs of just doing business on a daily basis. Is this an area that the government need to put some money behind?
Well, okay, there's 2 things. First of all, to answer your previous question, because I didn't get to the point on it. They need to drive additional competition into the Irish liability market. That would have been a tall order 3 years ago, because the Irish insurance market was a basket case and needed serious reform. But with all the reforms that have now happened and the reforms that are promised even between now and Christmas on areas like duty of care and the reform of the Personal Injuries Assessment Board, with all those reforms, Ireland is becoming an easier sell. And government have acknowledged that we need more competition, that we need to move from a situation where there's one quote available to a situation where there are two or three quotes available. And so they've been out in the international markets. They've charged the IDA to lead this project and go out and get additional underwriting capacity. Now, they had established that process in December 2020. It hasn't borne fruit yet. Government really needs to get moving on this now, because it's a matter of extreme urgency, and get that extra capacity in, because competition will keep everybody honest. Now, the second element of it, though, is those sectors that can't get cover. And then we have, as I said already, a societal decision to make. Do we just leave them as victims to the economic situation, or do we decide that they need saving, in which case the government has to intervene? Now, I'm not proposing, or the Alliance isn't proposing, that the state set up a new insurance company, because we've gone there before and it hasn't worked out well. So that's not necessarily the case. But what we're seeing increasingly abroad is models that we might use. So to give you an example, when it comes to flood insurance in the UK, and they have many homeowners who struggle in the way that homeowners do in Ireland, where they're on a floodplain. They've set up a business called Flood RE, which is subsidised by the insurance industry, backed by government, and is there to provide insurance cover to homeowners who can't get cover because they're on a floodplain, subject to certain terms and conditions. And there are always terms and conditions, and that's fine, because you can't just write a blank cheque on this. But we think that there's something valuable in there in terms of the sectors that can't get cover here. You've listed a lot of them already. Many of them are voluntary and community, but there are many valuable but small commercial sectors as well in that list.
Absolutely. And I know you've said there's a societal decision to be made too, but I'm sure many business owners listening are probably already, you know, we've just heard from businesses that are already closed because of rising costs as well. It's a huge challenge. Peter, unfortunately, time has just run out on us there now, but thank you for that update, and looking forward to seeing what the Alliance do in the coming months too, particularly as you begin to lobby government there and try to really drive through those changes. That's Peter Boland there from the Alliance for Insurance Reform. Time for a quick break. After that, you can find out what it's like to work in the new Lego shop up in Dublin. Lego must be the most famous brand in the world. It celebrates 90 years in existence this year, and it's just opened its first ever store in Ireland up on Grafton Street in Dublin. It's a 405 square metre store. It's their 898th store in the franchise, and it is growing rapidly at that. But there's a local connection. Mark Pearson from Port Arlington is a sales assistant in the shop on Grafton Street. So I began by asking Mark, what's it like to work in that Lego shop?
It is absolutely fantastic. There has been a great reception since we opened last Thursday, the 18th of August. We've had nothing but queues out the door. There's sets flying off the shelves. We've loads of different features kind of in the shop as well, which are unique to Lego shops, and not even in every Lego store. So some of those features are, we have a minifigure factory where you can design your own minifigure torso, so you can draw on it, you can put your name on it. There's different prints, plenty of leprechauns and things like that for being an Irish store. We have a build your own minifigure as well, where you can get three minifigures and you can choose whatever parts from the pile that is there. And we have a really cool thing, which is a digibox. So with this, you can hold a set up to kind of a TV screen, and it will give you an augmented reality of that set, so you'll be able to see exactly what you're getting in the box.
Wow. And they've gone a step further too. Like, you actually created customized models and particularly Irish features for the show, for the store.
Yeah, so there's a little model of Aviva Stadium, and there's also the Poolbeg Towers, which are really cool and unique to that shop alone.
brilliant. It brings that level of customization, I suppose. That's Lego in a nutshell. It's great building the sets, but when you can get into it and start building your own stuff, that's where it really inspires creative and inspires the next generations of engineers and creators all across the world too. So the feedback, it's been really popular. I know when it first opened, I think they were limiting people to about 30 minutes in store. How's it been in the week since? And is it really the adults that want to get in and to just blame the kids, or is it still just that kind of a cross-generational appeal?
So there's definitely cross-generation. There is a lot of kids coming in, especially when they're still on summer holidays. So I think we're expecting next week that it'll be more so the adults coming in. They won't be able to use their children as the excuse anymore coming into the shop. But we are still limiting the amount of people coming into the shop for the week after the initial weekend. We removed the wristband system on the Monday, but there was still a large crowd of people that wanted to enter the shop, so we had to bring back that system just to allow as many into the shop as possible, but still have a safe environment for everyone in the shop.
Cope with all those numbers. So what's a typical day like for the sales associate there? Are you kind of behind the tills? Are you just are helping customers? Or are you also advising people and trying to match people up with the most applicable sets, or trying to, you know, get whatever their own interests are and bring that out in whatever they might like to buy or experiment with?
So it's a little bit of everything. We do some behind the tills, some restocking, some mingling with the customers, having a huge interest in Lego myself and have built lots of sets over the years. I know I kind of have an insider information, if you like, to building the actual set. So if there's a customer that's kind of on the fence of whether they want to buy it or not, I could give them kind of what the build experience was like for me and my own personal take on it. And then again, like with choosing their team, a lot of them have a favorite team, but then, you know, I would give my input and my opinion on other teams, and that might then kind of broaden their horizon as well and get into the other sets.
What are the popular teams at the minute?
Definitely Star Wars and Harry Potter would be kind of the two main teams. Technic is quite popular as well, and then the classic kind of City and even the Friends team is very popular.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with the Harry Potter one myself. There's the full kind of scale model of Hogwarts at home in our house, and it has a couple of thousand pieces in it, but it really is a stunning toy, but a stunning model, you know, above it. Even though it's Lego, it looks absolutely incredible the way it has replicated the intricacies of Hogwarts there too. But you touched on it there a few minutes ago, Mark. You mentioned how you kind of have an interest or a keen interest in Lego, and I know there was a huge amount of applications for jobs in the store, but I'm going to suggest that yours probably stood out. Just tell the listeners about your interest in Lego, because it's saying it's an interest, I think, is a little bit of an understatement.
You could say that. So I kind of got into Lego about 15 years ago. I remember getting a police station for, I think, my 8th birthday, and kind of from there it spiraled into getting sets every birthday, every Christmas. And then back in 2018, so before the pandemic, there was a lot of interest in Lego, and I know whenever I had people coming over to the house, they were always amazed by the different models and stuff that I had just on a couple of shelves. So in July 2018, then I did an exhibition in Port Arlington, my hometown, and kind of just to see if there was interest in people going to view Lego, and we were started doing the exhibitions for charity. So it kind of went on from there. And in the last 4 years, minus kind of the 2 years for the pandemic, I've raised over 25,000 for different charities across the country.
Wow, well done. Well done. That's significant. And especially when you mentioned there, you factor in the 2 years of COVID. So clearly you could see that there was an interest in Lego out there. Did all that help when it came to applying for a job?
Absolutely. I think, you know, having the keen interest in Lego before getting the job, they could see that I knew a lot about the company. And even in the interview, I was asked the history of Lego, which I could ream off by heart. I've been preparing for that interview for 15 years. So it was definitely a plus
does it offer a chance then of progression down the line? Like, you know, are there stories of people who are now in maybe design positions or more senior positions at a company too that started out in the shops?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's certainly my goal. So I studied product design in Maynooth University. So kind of my love for Lego got me into product design. And now the fact I'm working in the Lego shop, I would hopefully one day go over to Billund in Denmark.
That's Mark Pearson. You've been listening to there from Port Ireland. And he's now a sales associate in the new Lego store in Dublin and very much somebody who's following his dreams. Mark mentioned exhibitions. If you're around on Sunday the 25th of September from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m, Mark's Brickworld has an exhibition in Sullis Eco Garden Shop in Port Arlington. Small entry fee for individuals and there's family prices available. And again, all money raised goes to charity and definitely worth checking out. Well done, Mark, and all the very best in your career. And that's it from Taking Care of Business for this evening. Hopefully this has been informative and you've got some good news from it too. Despite all the doom and gloom that's out there, wasn't it fabulous to hear of Lucy Kearns, only 7 years age and already full of entrepreneurial spirit. That's what we love to hear in this show. Take care. Time for me to go now. Joe Cooney will be here after news at 8 with Country Roads. Podcasts will be available at the show from around 10 o'clock tomorrow. Stay safe. Talk to you all next Tuesday evening.
Taking Care of Business returns next Tuesday at 7 p.m. with the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.